Welcome, John.
Hi there. Good morning. My name is John Monroe. I'm with Siegel Consulting. This morning, we're going to start off with a little educational session on pension obligation bonds, or POBs, as they're called. I think the main reason that we're doing this is to get the trustees up to speed on kind of how pension obligation bonds work in preparation for the next item that we're going to be discussing right after this one. Moving on here to slide two here. We're going to cover, we're going to do a brief review of what the unfunded liability is, how it's calculated, and how it's paid off. We're also going to do a little bit of overview and background on the pension obligation bonds, including general considerations, how to measure the potential economic benefit to the employer, and then some potential concerns about pension obligation bonds. And then we will conclude with how pension obligation bonds are handled in the annual actuarial evaluation that we do for this retirement association. Keep in mind that this presentation is, again, it's intended to help educate the trustees. It's not intended to help employers decide whether they should do a pension obligation bond or not. That's up to the employers and up to their financial consultants and so on, whether they should do that. On slide three here, we'll start with some brief overview on funding the retirement benefits and some of the actual terminology that we use. In the actual evaluation, what we do is we project out all future expected benefit payments, and then we discount them back to the valuation date using the 7% return assumption. And that's what we call the present value of future benefits. And that's really kind of the number that we're trying to fund towards. If there were assets on hand equal to that present value of future benefits, then no future contributions would need to be made as long as all assumptions in the future come true. But in practice, that amount is not funded entirely by assets. And so what we do is we have the normal cost is basically the cost allocated to the current year of service for active members. Only active members have a normal cost, and this is the amount that if it was contributed each year from the day the member was hired until the day they retired, all those normal costs would accumulate and equal the amount of expected benefit payments we'd be expected to pay for that member in the future. So so that's obviously a key number, and that amount is contributed each year. The actual accrued liability is basically the accumulated value of those past normal costs up to the member's current age. So that's the blue part at the bottom there. And then we have our current year's normal cost at the current age, and then we have the future normal costs that'll be paid in the future. All that at the bottom there is basically the present value of future benefits, the amount that we're trying to fund towards. This is another graphical representation of the present value future benefits. It's the whole circle here. And basically what's going on here is the actual accrued liability is basically the blue and the green areas up there. And what's going on is we have some assets on hand, and they cover part of the actual accrued liability, part of the blue there. The remaining blue is what we call the unfunded actual accrued liability. And basically, our current year contribution is intended to cover the current year normal costs there, so one piece of those future normal costs, plus an amortization of the unfunded liability, and that this retirement system uses an 18-year amortization of unfunded liability. So the current year contribution, again, is the normal cost plus an amortization of that unfunded liability there. So again, we calculate the unfunded liability. It's the actual accrued liability minus the assets, the actual value of assets. It is paid off over time as a series of payments over 18 years. In this case, the payments increase over time. They're assumed to go up as payroll goes up each year. And so that is a little bit different than like a home mortgage, where a home mortgage, you're going to make a level fixed payment each year. Here, the payments go up each year as payroll is assumed to increase. But a similarity to a home mortgage is each unfunded payment includes both interest and then a pay down on the principal balance. Okay, so that's like a mortgage payment. And we charge interest using the actual return assumption, so 7% a year. Okay, so at this point, we'll move into some discussion on what a pension obligation bond is. And basically, a pension obligation bond, a governmental entity goes out and issues bonds and takes the proceeds from those bonds and puts them in the pension plan, basically invests them in the pension plan to pay down a portion or all of their unfunded liability. Those pension obligation bonds, they're invested along with all the other retirement system assets. So basically, the entity is taking on debt service. They got to pay off those bonds after they issue them, but they're getting a lower contribution in the retirement plan. Okay, so that's what's going on there. And basically, what they're trying to do is borrow at a lower rate when issuing those bonds, and then taking those proceeds and putting them in the pension plan and earn a higher rate. I mean, that's what they're trying to do. So I think a key word here is leverage, because they're taking on some additional debt, and they're putting them proceeds in the retirement plan and hoping to earn more than the interest that's on the debt. So that's what they're hoping to do. But there is definitely market volatility involved with investing those assets in the pension plan. So on this slide here, slide 7, just to recap, so they issue those bonds, the fixed obligation debt instruments, and then they invest those proceeds in the pension assets. That reduces their unfunded liability. And again, they're hoping that the return on the assets will exceed basically the interest on the bond payments. Back in the 1980s, POBs were tax exempt, so it was easier to get a positive spread between the return on the pension assets and the interest on the bond payments. But then around 1986, there was a change, and pension obligation bonds became taxable, so that made it harder to achieve that spread. There was a lot of pension obligation bonds in the early 1990s, some in the early 2000s, in recent years not as much. Whether to issue a pension obligation bond, it's a complex matter. I mean, there's financial analysis involved, and beliefs about risk and future economic conditions and so on, as we'll see as we go through this presentation here. So again, it's really trying to borrow money at a low rate and then take those funds and invest it in the pension plan and hopefully return a higher rate. That's what basically they're trying to do with the pension obligation bond. When those pension obligation bond proceeds are invested in the pension plan, they pay down unfunded liability. That decreases the unfunded liability contribution rate for that employer. If they totally pay off their unfunded liability, then the contribution rate drops down to just normal cost for that employer. And again, on slide 8 here, I mean, this is the bond underwriter's pitch. I mean, they want to sell, they want to help you issue bonds at like 5%, let's say, and then, tell you should take those proceeds, put them in the pension plan, you're going to earn 7%. So, and the difference is basically going to be a economic benefit or a savings to the employer. So that's really how it kind of works. A few things to be aware of here. This economic benefit, it's only realized if the pension plan actually earns the 7% actual rate. I mean, if it doesn't earn that actual rate, as we'll go through an example later, you'll see that there's actually an increased cost to the employer. There could be. There's extra volatility because we now have more assets in the pension plan, so there's extra volatility there. And market timing risk is a big potential issue here. Whether a pension obligation bond provides cost savings or not for an employer depends largely on when the bond was invested in, when the proceeds were invested in the pension plan, and what the market does, especially in the first few years after that. There's bond issuance fees, and that those debt service payments on the bonds, those are a fixed obligation, and they are now basically part of the employer's total pension cost. You know, when the county issued bonds years ago in 2003 and so on, I mean, so the county pays not only the employer contribution rate from the pension plan, but they also pay the debt service on those bond bonds that they issued back then. And in some, not around here, but in some cases, there's been employers that have issued pension obligation bonds to help pay more current or short-term contributions, but then they pay off those bonds over a longer period of time, and that can be an issue, basically deferring cost into the future. Here's an example on the next few slides. Let's say there's a governmental entity issues a $100 million pension bond, and they have $100 million of unfunded liability. So they're going to fully pay down their unfunded liability with that pension with the proceeds from the pension obligation bond. You know, we have an 18. They're going to pay off the pension obligation bond over 18 years. That matches the 18-year amortization period for the unfunded liability. We have a few other assumptions: 7% actual investment return assumption, 3.25% payroll growth, and a 5% interest rate on the bonds, and $1 million in expenses on issuing the bonds. So basically, in this little example here, if the pension plan assets actually earn 7% for each of the next 18 years, then the employer payments are going to decrease by about $27 million over that 18-year period. Present value of those savings, about $17 million. So what we did on this graph is we calculated the employer contributions with the POB versus what they would have been without the POB, and these are negative numbers, so these are basically savings. So if you earn 7% each year, it looks great because you borrow it at 5%, you put that money in the pension plan, you earn 7%, so your total payments have gone down. Sounds great, except if we do another example, let's say the pension plan earns 4% each year. In this case, there's actually an increase in the total employer payments of $20 million over the 18 years. And so basically, you borrowed money at 5%, you put in the pension plan, you earned 4%, so your payments over time have actually gone up here, and that's basically, again, this is another slide that shows the difference between the payments, and they're actually an increase in payments over time there.
John, would you talk a yep. little bit about why you use 5% instead of 7?
For the interest,
discounting mm-hmm. the benefit or the detriment back.
Yeah, I think that's arguable. You could do it either way. When we calculate the present value of the savings, I think is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's arguments could be made for either discounting at 5 or 7. I think this was mainly just purposes of illustration to give you a general idea of the present value of the savings and mainly that or the cost increase here. I think there's arguments could be made for either rate. Yeah,
obviously the 7 produces a lower
yep.
gain or loss. So
discounted value. Yep, that's right. That's right. Yep. So I think we're just trying to illustrate that the actual return that the pension plan has is going to have a big effect on whether the employer's total cost actually goes up or down after issuing the pension obligation bond.
Okay.
And that's basically what slide 14 says. I mean, it whether it's a cost savings or a cost increase depends on whether the fund actually returns the investment return assumption or at least something above the interest rate on the POB. You know, you got to look at a long time horizon here. You know, you got to go out as far as the bond duration and the amortization period for the unfunded liability. So at least 18 years to kind of have an idea of whether this is, something that may work out or not. There's leverage again because you're putting more money at risk in the pension plan. So there's more contribution volatility there. And even when some modeling may show that a pension obligation bond is going to, save money, it again depends on market timing. Okay, You know, whether you put that those proceeds in and the market returns 20% or negative 20%, especially in the first few years after that, can have a big impact on whether it's going to be cost savings or not. And you don't really know whether there's cost savings until actually after the bonds have matured. And, you know, that can be a pretty long time. And, you know, again, it should be focused on paying down unfunded liability, not substituting for making current contribution requirements and stuff like that. You know, the Government Finance Officers Association, the GFOA, they issued an advisory in 2015 recommending the governmental entities do not issue pension obligation bonds. They have some reasons here, you know, fail to earn interest owed on the bonds, complex instruments, can use up debt capacity that could be used for other purposes. And in some cases, we got entities that are basically, you know, using pension obligation bonds to pay current contributions. That's not going on here. And then rating agencies may not view issuing pension obligation bonds as credit positive. S&P Global Ratings in 2017 issued some commentary on pension obligation bonds. And you know, when they do, you know, look at the rate, you know, when they do a rating for a governmental entity, these are some of the things they look at, especially if they're doing a pension obligation bond. You know, are they trying to use them for short-term budget relief? Market timing, and also, you know, there's financially distressed employers that may be using pension obligation bonds to pay short-term contributions, and that can be a credit negative action. At least as viewed by S&P Global Ratings. Okay, so at this point, the last two slides here, we want to go over how POBs are handled in the annual actuarial valuation. So any POBs or additional employer payments, they reduce the unfunded liability for the employer, and they reduce the unfunded liability contribution rate for that employer. And I mean, there's a few things that can happen here. I mean, there an employer, and we haven't had this happen for a while, not since 2005 when Confire did a pension obligation bond. And then in that case, they paid off their entire unfunded liability. In recent years, we've had smaller additional payments be made from like the Central Sanitary District and a few other employers. And basically what happens is we take that additional payment or that pension obligation bond, and we reduce the unfunded liability for that employer. But then we also have to adjust that employer's unfunded liability contribution rate. Now, if they paid off their entire unfunded liability, their unfunded liability contribution rate would go to zero, clearly. But in these cases where they're just paying off a small portion of unfunded liability, we basically treat it like a contribution gain, which gets amortized over 18 years using the investment return and payroll growth assumptions in the valuation. And we basically calculate a dollar credit, convert it to a percent of payroll, and reduce their unfunded liability contribution rate. So that's kind of how we reduce the rate in the valuation for employers have done an additional contribution or issued a POB. Now, after depooling, we have 12 cost groups in the valuation, and a lot of cost groups only have one employer, which makes this a lot simpler, but if you have multiple employers, that's where this gets a little bit more complicated. When you have multiple employers in a cost group, we only want to adjust the contribution rate for the employer that issued the POB. We don't want to, give all the employers in a cost group the benefit of the POB when it was issued by one employer. So basically, we have to do a calculation where we basically pretend the POB is not there, calculate the contribution rate, and that's the rate that the employers that didn't issue a POB pay, and then we have to calculate the contribution rate for the employer that did issue the POB. And what we do is we basically take that POB, and it's treated like a kind of like a UAL amortization layer. In this case, it's a credit layer. It reduces unfunded liability. It's credited with earnings at the return assumption, and it's reduced each year by the dollar amount of the credit to the employer. So so basically that credit, it only goes to that employer, and it's basically tracked each year in the future until it's basically been fully amortized. Now, employers are in their own cost group. That's a lot easier because basically the POB is just directly added to that cost group. You don't need to track it, anything like that. That's the only employer in that cost group, and they're basically their unfunded liability and their unfunded liability payments, just automatically go down as it's included in that cost group there. So again, the more complicated situations where we got multiple employers in a cost group where we only need to adjust one of the employer's contribution rate, the one that issued the POB or did the extra contributions there. Okay, so I think that's basically what I wanted to cover at this point. Open it up to any questions.
Any questions for John?
A very quick question. Do you know how the issuer, the POB issuer, pays the principal and the interest through parcel tax or through to issue another bond to pay this POB? Do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. You're talking about how the entity that issues the pension obligation, how they pay it?
Yeah. Pay the.
Yeah, I'm honestly not entirely sure. I'm not sure if we have anybody here that knows how that works. I know the county's done it before, but that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
And with Contra Costa Fire, we just pay for it as part of our general, we just budget for it too. So we don't have a special pay for it. It's like for retirement contribution. It comes out of a different expenditure account. But it's a tax intercept, so when we get our tax allocation from the audit controller, the amount of our payments, our principal interest, are intercepted into a separate fund, and then the payments are made out of that fund.
Out of your general fund?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Well, the tax is intercepted out of our general fund into a payment fund.
Okay.
I would, just adding on that, you don't need to know.
That's right.
Yeah. He doesn't. That's why I wanted to ask.
It's a matter. It's completely independent of the actual amortization and payoff of the debt.
Yep, that's correct.
Any other questions for John? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.